And I've got the joyous task of recapping the journey of the week for you to start with. So we started off looking at the characters Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra and the form of the Heart Sutra, hearing the great six thunderclaps maybe for the first time and exploring our senses. Then we went on to exploring the five skandhas, learning what the five skandhas are, meditating on the five skandhas, kept on coming back to the five skandhas so that we could explore them. And then we had a beautiful sharing from Ratna Vandana of her experience of exploring the skandhas for herself on solitary, seeing them as flow, the five rivers, and we carried on meditating on the five skandhas. Then we started getting our minds blown apart by entering into shunyata. We had a talk by Bhajasiddhi, what is it, what is it not? And we heard about the qualities of shunyata, openness, clarity and sensitivity, and started to explore those in our own experience. And then yesterday had our minds blown even more by chucking Buddhism into the cooking pot. All dharmas are empty. There is no unchanging, substantial 12 nidana chain, no four noble truths, no perfection of wisdom even. We had to let go of the rafts, the finger pointing at the moon. And I can't say anything else about it. That's that. But for now, let's not kid ourselves. Bhante reminded us right at the beginning of the week, some exceptional individuals might make the leap into the perfection of wisdom from nowhere, but they are very rare. One cannot assume one belongs to that class oneself. So we need to go back to the raft. Okay. So today we're going to look at thunderclaps 5 and 6. So thunderclap 5 is bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. And thunderclap 6, all Buddhas of past, present and future gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. All Buddhas of past, present and future gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of the wisdom. So the story goes that Shakyamuni Buddha, our Buddha, the Buddha of the present time, attained enlightenment by doing the mindfulness of breathing. But just to be clear, he wasn't doing breathe in, breathe out, count one. Breathe in, breathe out, count two. Breathe in, breathe out, count three. Okay? What I'm assuming he was doing in that mindfulness of breathing was that there was that kindly observation of the impermanent, empty, unsatisfactory nature of his direct experience of the breathing body. So he would have had body, he would have had rupa, vedana, he would have been exploring those sensations, watching them arise and fall as he breathed in and out, dharmas, thoughts, experiences, everything, he would have been watching those arise and fall. And he linked it to the breath because we have the breath, we have to keep breathing. So it's always there. It's an anchor for us. That's why we do the mindfulness of breathing. There's nothing particularly special about the breath compared to the rest of that experience. It's just that we can stop thinking we stop thinking, thoughts disappear. If you start looking at thoughts, they start disappearing. Start looking at Vedana, it changes and disappears and you can't think, okay, I'm just going to focus on my belly. Nothing happens in your belly for 40 minutes, but you have to keep breathing. So keep coming back to the breath. And also we had Parinirvana Day yesterday, and again, the story goes that his final words to his disciples before he died were, with mindfulness, strive on. Again, it wasn't breathe in, breathe out, count one at that point. It's that investigation of the nature of existence. Then we had a beautiful introduction to Maitreya last night. So he's the Buddha of future. So Buddha of the present relied on the perfection of wisdom. The Buddha of the future, Maitreya, is going to have to rely on the perfection of wisdom, and that includes us. So it's all in his name, friendliness. And Maitreya mentioned metta as insight. So he's still relying on the perfection of the wisdom, but he's practicing becoming less selfish. Okay. So the key word in these two thunderclaps is rely. Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. All Buddhas of past, present and future gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. If you look up rely in the dictionary, there's a whole section that sort of has monetary terms, bank, count and reckon, which I found very interesting, but we're not going to look at those ones. So it's depending upon, be confident of, be sure of, believe in, have faith in, place trust in. So rely, depend, be confident of, be sure of, believe in, have faith in, place trust in. So today we're talking about relying on the perfection of wisdom as faith. So seeing as I've had George Michael as an earworm all week, you can now have it. Because you gotta have faith. You gotta have faith. Because you gotta have faith, faith, faith. You gotta have faith, faith, faith. Baby! Okay, there you go. Nice earworm for you. So yesterday, Shubha introduced the three aspects of faith, deep, lucid, and longing. But I'm going to talk a bit about how we can recognise faith in ourselves and cultivate faith in ourselves. And then a little bit about what to do when we think we haven't got any faith left at all. It's hopefully practical for you. So as with emptiness, of course, faith as a word has a whole variety of connotations for different people. And for some people, it's just a word that they just think yuck. And some people, it's a word that opens them out. So you need to find the word or phrase that works for you for faith. And I've chosen three that really work for me in different contexts. So for me, placing trust in the perfection of wisdom, having confidence in the perfection of wisdom, and placing my heart upon the perfection of wisdom, which is another term for faith.
What heart?
Placing my heart. Placing my heart. Yeah. So with placing trust in the perfection of wisdom, this is not blindly trusting. This is not like in early Christianity, where only the priests or monks could read the texts and everyone else just had to rely on these people. As the Buddha said right from the beginning, we must know in our own experience. We must question openly, question ourselves, question people who we trust, and find out what the perfection of wisdom is. Actually experience it. So hopefully some of you might have experienced something this week, a glimpse or more than a glimpse. And then once you've experienced a glimpse, trust your practice is effective. Keep your practice flexible, alive, adjust your practice as conditions change. Don't think just because you had a glimpse one meditation when you happen to be, you spotted a bit of Vedana, that you've got to keep going with that thing if it's no longer alive for you. If that's not working, move on to something else. Keep it alive. And use Kalyana Mitrata, use spiritual friendship. So if you can't trust yourself or you're stuck or you're feeling that there's something you can't quite see, you can feel you're on the edge of something, but you can't get to it. And that might be, Maitreya mentioned, you might be in a room with zebra wallpaper and you've been in that all your life, so you just can't see it. But your friends can see it. Your friends think, oh, she's in a room with zebra wallpaper, that's very interesting. And they might not say it to you, but ask them, what's my wallpaper? Ask good, wise, helpful and honest friends. I'm going to come back to that kind of friendship thing in a minute. Have confidence in the perfection of wisdom. So again, it's your direct experience. So today, after this, when we're going to do the meditations, I'm going to suggest, rather than looking at the later skandhas, I'm going to suggest you come back to Rupa and Vedana, so that we're back with direct sensations, not the thoughts, not the perceptions, not the labelling, not the papancha, not the endless streams of consciousness around it, but the direct sensations and the Vedana, the hedonic tone, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant or neutral, because that's where the gap is. So if you can actually come back to your direct experience, then you can have confidence that at some point you'll find the gap. As soon as you notice you're thinking, you can have the next thought is, oh, I'm thinking, I wonder what the sensations are. Coming back into the body, back into Vedana. Have confidence that the nature of shunyata or emptiness, you know, we use these words, but have confidence it is your direct experience. We are shunyata, we are emptiness. We're not talking about something that's outside of us. We are connected to everything else in the universe in that way, through emptiness. And we can learn to recognize those qualities of shunyata, even if in a limited sense and for a limited time. So any time you're thinking and then you think, I'm thinking, label it clarity. Come back to sensation. Every time you, in the metta bhavana, have a sense of metta, have a sense of opening of the heart, or a sense of warmth, or a sense of simple friendliness towards somebody else. Label it, sensitivity, come back to the sensations. Every time you're feeling an open, expansive feeling, no boundaries, no borders, love, whatever that is, if it's, label it, openness. Don't just think, oh, making it up, like I do sometimes. Trust that experience, then they will expand. If you trust your experiences of clarity, sensitivity and openness, that you're creating a new sanskara, a sanskara that recognizes shunyata, that recognizes the path to enlightenment. So place your heart upon the perfection of wisdom. Have the intention of understanding it, not rationally, but really understanding it. So for me, that would be, I'd understand it in my body. I'd feel those feelings or sensitivity, openness, clarity. Other people would be different ways. So set the course, set your course. Seek out what resonates with you, what touches you, and allow that to fill you and guide you, whatever your source of inspiration is. It is your personal path. It's not that everybody has to take on Prajnaparamita and the perfection of wisdom in the same way. We will all have our own path to perfection of wisdom. But as long as your personal path is aligning with the perfection of wisdom, whether you're a mother, whether you're working in a full-time career, whether you're living alone, whether you're with others, whether ethics floats your boat, whether you're an artist, whether you're on the path of love, the path of service, you write poetry, or the Bodhisattva ideals touched you, whatever it is, align it with the perfection of wisdom. So as Ratnavandana said in her talk, start making everything you do sacred. So coming back to the fifth thunderclap, Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. I used to have a phrase that I used to say to myself, well, I'm a bodhisattva in training. And we can sort of say, we can say that, we can say we're bodhisattvas in training, or we're thinking about becoming bodhisattvas in training, or we're thinking about the bodhisattva ideal. But that sometimes lets us off the hook. And actually, what we need to say now is we are bodhisattvas. We are future Maitreya. And that means we need to take ourselves and our practice way more seriously. I've got an example of somebody doing this. So Dado Rinpoche was asked whether he knew in himself that he was a reincarnated bodhisattva. And he said, I don't know. I've been told I was since I can remember. And so I just act as though I am. That's what we need to do as well. So find our path and have perfection of wisdom underlying or working alongside everything we do. So then, of course, we forget. I do anyway. Some of you might not forget as much. But notice when we've forgotten. So when we forget that all conditioned things are by their very nature unsatisfying, you'll notice that because you'll find yourself fantasizing, wishing things, wishing for things, wishing people, situations were different, trying to get a comfortable life, trying to shore yourself up with lovely, comfortable things, beauty, beautiful things. Okay, that's when we've forgotten that all things are by their very nature unsatisfying. So the gateway to freedom from that particular forgetting is wishlessness. Nirvana is here and now exactly as things are. If you notice yourself saying, I wish I'd, or I wish she wouldn't, or I should have. It's wishlessness. Everything is perfect. Nirvana is here. Okay. So if you find ourselves forgetting that all conditioned things, so everything, all dharmas, are by their very nature impermanent, we'll find ourselves fixing down. We'll label people. We might label them as annoying or lovely. We might label them as my friend, my enemy. And we start to be unable to see change both in ourselves and in others. We might start clinging to our possessions and have fear of losing them or them getting broken. We might have fear of losing our possessions as well. We want our possessions to stay as they are, clinging to them. So just be aware of the fixing language you might do even in your head. So when you say, I'm angry, or she's clever, you're fixing yourself as angry and you're fixing her as clever, labelling people. So you could start you could start thinking more in terms of, I'm feeling angry right now. I'm feeling angry right now. Or that's a really clever point she's made. Or what a brilliant talk she did yesterday. So the gateway to freedom from this kind of forgetting, forgetting impermanence, is signlessness. Stop hanging signs on everything. I imagine like an actual physical sign that I put. So there I go, Maitricity. Good morning, Maitricity. Here's your sign for the day. I'm going to remember everything you did yesterday, and I might pull you up on it as well at the same time. Rather than taking her as a new being. Stop hanging signs on things. So it might be easier with the table as well, if you work with things. But particularly stop hanging signs on yourself. It's very interesting as a retreat leader to sometimes hear how people talk about themselves and talk about their practice. Sometimes fixing themselves like, well, I don't like the metta bhavana, or I do like the mindfulness of breathing, or I can't sit for more than 20 minutes. Very fixed views. Yeah, signlessness, limitless potential of everything. that's probably again a Maitreya quality, limitless potential. And then thirdly, the third lakshana, so if we forget that all things are by their very nature insubstantial or empty, we may find ourselves feeling defensive because we think there's a core me that's going to get hurt unless I say what I think and what I feel. Or are we trying to find ultimate satisfaction from our life? So remember, there is no self to defend, there is no self to satisfy. The gateway to freedom is emptiness. And the only rational response is love. Every time we're not responding with love, we're being irrational. To put it the other way around. So how do you do this? How do you do this? So I'm going to do it in terms of going for refuge to the three jewels, just briefly. So the Buddha jewel. The Buddha jewel I've put as the quality of openness, receptivity to your inspiration. So whether you're inspired by the life of the Buddha or parts of the life of the Buddha, or a particular bodhisattva, or a particular quality of the enlightenment experience, whether it's openness, clarity, or sensitivity, run with that. Have confidence. Have confidence in your own source of inspiration. The Dharma. Investigate the senses, the six senses, five physical senses and the mind sense. Investigate the skandhas, do one at a time. Don't try and do a whole thing one at a time. And at the very least, investigate your breathing body and those sensations that you can feel there. Start searching for the permanence that you think there is. Where is the me? Is the me in my breath? Is the me in my body? Is it in my feelings? Is it in Vedana? Is it in my perceptions? Am I my perceptions? Am I my habits, my volitional formations? Am I divided consciousness? Where is the me? So whatever touches you in the Dharma, so you don't have to go home thinking, right, I'm going to practice the perfection of wisdom, whatever that is. Perfection of wisdom is everything. It's empty. It's there. It's in everything. So you can stick with the sources of your own inspiration of the Dharma, whether it's the Brahma Viharas. Do it as the Brahma Viharas of impermanence, because actually equanimity only really makes sense when you take into consideration the perfection of wisdom. Metta makes sense alongside the perfection of wisdom. Mudita, sympathetic joy, alongside the perfection of wisdom. And Karuna, if you don't want to get completely overwhelmed by the suffering in the world, you have to hold it in the context of the perfection of wisdom. So you're creating a bigger vessel of positive emotion to hold reality. Engage in the beautiful around the Dharma. So really engage in it. Really engage in whatever touches you. Art, music, dance, writing, poetry, friendship. Exploring yourself. I loved psychology. So psychology to me is beautiful. So engaging in that. And ethics. Bhante talks about ethics being the natural response to wisdom. So remember this if all else fails. Or have another simple yet deep aspect of the Dharma that inspires you and you can act as your ground when you feel disconnected from it all. So find your personal thread, your personal Dharma. What can you go back to when you're feeling doubt, when you can't access faith? And the Sangha jewel. Simple friendliness. Think of Maitreya. A smile, engaging with others, showing interest. The practice that we have in the movement of rejoicing in one another is profound. Practice it. Do it in your GFR groups or in Mitra study. Do it with your friends in the Sangha. Rejoice in each other. So the other, another aspect of the Sangha, Jewel, is that you're cultivating self-awareness rather than self-obsession. So just watch yourself in that. Why are you trying to do this? Why are you learning about your reactions? It's not so that you can control other people and say, when you said that, I felt that. Can you not do it again, please? Okay, that's not the purpose of understanding your reactivity. The purpose is, one of the purposes to start with, is so that you can understand yourself. And you can empathise with others when they are reactive. So notice your tones as you're telling your GFR group how you feel about something that happened last week. Have you got, are you telling them off? Are you expecting them to all change? Or are you just giving them information so that they can be sensitive and you can be sensitive to that situation being a trigger for you? So just, it's a very, very subtle edge, but a fantastic edge of practice. And it's the perfection of wisdom. And again, with the Sangha Jewel, there's this beauty of each person opening and becoming more and more transparent with each other. There's an opportunity to be mirrored by other people. So either something really annoys you about somebody in your Mitra study group, and then you realise it's because you have that same quality and you do that same thing sometimes. Or you really don't like doing that, but you, yeah, anyway, you know what I mean? But there's massive opportunities to change by using the Sangha Jewel with alongside the perfection of wisdom. So make sure you've taken the initiative and shown your intention to be receptive. Because what happens is you're in this group and people can feel scared or worried that if they say something, it's going to cause conflict or a rift. But if you say, actually, I really want to change, I really want to move, I really want my sanskaras to be moving in a positive flow. If you hear me saying something for the fifth week in a row, the same thing over and over again, and I haven't noticed, will you tell me? Yeah, good. Or please ask me about it. Ask me more. Why am I saying that? You know, your interest is, show your interest. And check out with your friends in those groups whether they'd be happy for you to do the same as well, because that is when you start going deeper and that's when you start really looking together with the perfection of wisdom. So the Sangha Jewel, yeah, the Buddha Jewel, the Sangha Dharma Jewel and the Sangha Jewel, use them. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my personal experience of having to realign myself with the perfection of wisdom, to recreate my intention and replace my heart upon the perfection of wisdom, despite feeling disconnected from it and not getting it at all. So you've got to imagine the scenario. So I go on retreat. Pranyaparamita is very vivid, my meditation is very spacious, I get in touch with openness, I feel very clear, the metta bhavana, yeah, a sense of warmth, and actually, even on this retreat, I had a couple of days nearer the beginning, and then all that disappeared again. So actually, I could talk about even within a retreat. But definitely, there's a point when I go home, not definitely, often, there's a point when I go home, oh, see that fixing? Often I go home and I lose contact with it. So we try and in the community, we're lucky because we're living and working together. So we report in together, and so you can report in for a couple of days, you're reporting in, you're still inspired, da 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 da, and then gradually it often dissipates. So one of the things I definitely practice, even when I'm disconnected, is ethics. I think for me, the precepts are a concrete thing that I can just do. And I don't have to conceptually worry about it too much. But there are some days when I don't even want to do that. So some days, when it's really busy over there, our dishwasher needs emptying maybe 5 or 6 times a day. And you've done it once, openly and spaciously, yes, open-handed generosity. I'm just going to empty the dishwasher. Twice, open-handed generosity. By the third time, is anyone else doing anything around here? I'm not doing it. And then you start closing up. And at that point, if I'm not in connection with why ethics is important, then I may not empty the dishwasher. So how do you get back in contact with it? So one of the things I do is I particularly then, if I can't feel it myself and I can't feel the effect of my own ethical practice, I then have to notice it in others. So I have good friends in the community and I watch them. And they don't notice me watching them, but I watch them. And I watch them being friendly, smile. No, if I'm feeling really, this is, you know, really bad mood, closed off, just want to hide in my room, I just watch somebody else being friendly to somebody else or helping somebody else or supporting somebody else. And I see the effect that's had on both of them and it starts to open me up. And it can be a process of open, close until I can open back up. So I have to trust, I have to learn to trust that ethical practice leads to happiness, contentment, wisdom, connection. So then I can act as if I'm feeling generous, even though I'm not, because I know that will still have an effect. So often in community, that's what you're doing. You're often, unless you're enlightened, you're acting as if so that you're getting some practice in and heading in that way. So actually, I've just noticed I've done this in the threefold path. So it's ethics, meditation, and wisdom. So that's my first work, my first anchor when lots of other things have failed. So secondly, meditation. So how do you place your heart upon meditation even when out of touch of it? Retreat meditation often is different from the everyday, not always. But often my everyday meditation, a bit like Maitreya, is a bit foggy, uninspired, dull, vague. I can be planning the day, the week, fantasizing, wondering why I'm there, thinking what's the point, all that kind of stuff can be going on. So what I have done in the 7 years I've lived here is just make sure that I have the intention to meditate each day with the rest of the community. So whatever's happening, the intention is that that's what I'm doing. And that's for myself, for the others in the community, for others in the whole world, and for, again, creating that positive sanskara, which is a habit, which is I meditate every day. So the view is I meditate every day. So sometimes you don't, if you've had a really bad night's sleep or something has happened and you can't get there. But the intention is I meditate every day. And if I don't make it to the morning sit for whatever reason, I make sure that at some point I light the candles on my shrine and maybe just sit on the cushion with the candles and see what happens. Still has the intention still there. And then wisdom. So to be honest, when there are occasions, lots of occasions, when I'm completely disconnected from the perfection of wisdom, I don't want to see impermanence, I don't want to see insubstantiality, I don't want to see dukkha. I want to create a satisfying, light, comfortable life and shore myself up in that way. I just want to be me. And nothing's going to change that, it appears. And I particularly have a voice that comes up that says I can't. So when I'm in that state is because I'm saying a lot of, internally saying a lot of I can't. I can't get up. I can't meditate. I can't do the washing up. I can't write this email. You know, it's that kind of mental state. For me, that's the kind of mental state when I'm not in contact with perfection of wisdom at all. So as soon as I notice it, that is a shift. That is me creating fresh karma. So when I notice my voice, so this is why it's so important to become self-aware, because you learn what your own voices of negativity are. As soon as I notice it, first thing I notice is I want to hold on to it. I don't want to change that. I want to be the I can't person. Because if I'm not the I can't person, that means I can. I don't want to do that. So that's the first thing you have to notice. Whatever it is that you say to yourself a lot, why there's an investment in that, because you don't want to change that. So once I notice, and once I've noticed that I don't want to let go of it, then I just have to sit with beauty. So again, this will be the lighting the candles on my shrine, or tidying my room. Usually by that stage, my room's got messy. You know, the desk is messy. So it's like, actually, I need a clear space. Sitting with beauty, or just aligning myself with beauty, even if I can't feel it, even if it's not coming in or through me. So at that point, I might just sit either with forming the mudra of Pranya Paramita myself at my heart, or imagining that her actual hands are at my heart, holding that. And then I don't have to think through, oh, emptiness, emptiness, three lakshanas, three vimokshas, compassion, wisdom. I'm not thinking any of that. It's just placed at my heart, and I'm not forcing anything. I can bypass my intellect, my skeptical mind, and just focus on freedom, and just focus on the heart area. So, to finish, Bhante says in Wisdom Beyond Words around these two thunderclaps, the Bodhisattva gains enlightenment and becomes a Buddha only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. There is no other way. You cannot become enlightened unless you developed perfect wisdom. You may be a great scholar. You may be deeply versed in the techniques of concentration and meditation. You may be very devoted, pious, full of faith. You may be forever doing good works, even to the extent of giving your own life for the sake of others. But none of these worthwhile attainments are ultimately any help. Only perfect wisdom, in the sense of direct, face-to-face knowledge of ultimate reality, beyond Buddhism itself, will confer enlightenment. So perfection of wisdom is totally mysterious. This isn't Bhante, this is me. Magical, mind-blowing, and it is also our current experience.